And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Friday. It's the 4th of April. Hope you're all doing very well. Thank you very much for joining us for another show. And hopefully you'll join us with your opinions as well. It's our Friday panel. I'll introduce them to you very shortly, but we want your views as we work through the hour. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000, or you can give us a call on 07491 25,000. We'd love to hear from you, and if you prefer, it's comments at highlandradio.com. and as always, every day you can watch this show live if you're at home or working from home on your smart TV, your Fire Stick. We're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland, and we're on Facebook and X as well. Right, okay, let's say good morning to Ben Harkin. He's an author and chair of Ogra Fianna Fáil in Donegal. Good morning to you, Ben.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks
so much for having me. It's a recent elevation as chair, isn't it? That's only the last couple of weeks, isn't it? Or is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, I'm delighted. I'm delighted that the members of Ogra Fianna Fáil put their support in me. So it's a one-year term. So I think that maybe in the last year we've been focused a lot on the elections. Maybe we haven't got as many meetings in that. So meeting with the executive now of Ogra Fianna Fáil tomorrow to maybe set out our aims for the year and see what we can do. But no, I'm delighted. Another step in the direction.
Is there much interest amongst the young in Fianna Fáil?
There is. There's big Ogra organisations in the likes of DCU, UCD and Trinity, and that, you know, and that features a lot of rural members as well. It's a bit more difficult in the rural counties when everybody's separate and away at college and that. But no, we have an active membership that I think played an important part in, you know, in the canvassing and that in the election. So I think it's going to be an interesting year. It's going to be important now for us to meet and decide, you know, what we want to do and what we set out our aims.
Professor Pat O'Connor is Professor of Sociology and Social Policy Emeritus at the University of Limerick. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Good morning, Greg.
Great to see and hear from you again. How are you keeping?
Oh, hanging in there, like the rest of the country.
Okay. Right. Catherine Noon, lawyer and former Fine Gael Senator. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Are you in? You're in Ireland.
I'm out of the country. I apologise. I don't mean to sicken anyone.
No, it's not that. It's just like I know we've had good weather, but I ain't sitting outdoors at 6 minutes past nine in the morning.
No, this is where I am, Greg. I do apologise.
You're in Fáin.
I'm in Lanzarote.
It looks
so I spend a bit of time here. I work from here sometimes. So,
well, if you can, why not? Lovely.
Yeah, brilliant. And yeah, it's good actually. Yeah, it's doable. Yeah. So I don't mean to sicken anyone at home.
No, listen, we are...
Yeah, the weather's lovely at home. I'm kind of sorry I'm not at home. Yeah.
We're not sitting outside in the mornings. but anyway, I don't begrudge you, is what I was going to say.
Oh, thank you, Greg. That's
right, okay. After weeks of anticipation, we learned the initial extent of Donald Trump's tariffs this week. 20% on EU imports, 10% on UK imports. 2.4 trillion euro was wiped off the global stock markets after Trump's announcements, which he said will make America rich again. For now, the pharma sector has not been hit with specific tariffs, but there is provision for that, so we'll see what comes next. The EU is considering its response negotiations in the first instance, but if that fails, I'm sure the bloc will retaliate, which could have a major ramifications for us if the likes of food or booze or even tech is included. Pat O'Connor, I'll start with you. What's your reaction to the week's developments?
Well, I mean, in a way, what can one say that hasn't already been said? I suppose, ironically, I found myself in the situation where I'm actually hoping the stock market may be the solution. I never thought I'd say that, but really, it seems to be the one element that... I mean, one would have expected American Congress to begin to act because this is executive order territory. They haven't. They're not. I mean, there are small attempts by one Democrat, one Republican to do something. But really, the only thing that seems likely to create any degree of sanity is the stock market. I suppose what is... there are loads of things that are worrying, and what is also very, I know it's not really helpful to say, but we have realised now, we are realising that we have had a bonanza in the country, and really the fact that we have 5,000 children still homeless, the fact that we have a Ishke Éireann, which is really non-functioning. We still don't have a proper childcare system. And already Micheál Martin, talking on the news just before I came on, was saying some elements of the programme for government would be implemented, and he did not mention childcare. So really, I'm wondering what will be cut. I suppose I do think there's an element of kind of repressed panic about the whole thing. I mean, paradoxically, the president of the ICMSA sounded a note of sanity and calmness by saying that Kerrygold was a luxury item, and he thought it was, demand was inelastic. In other words, even if the price went up by 20%, people who bought it were unlikely to stop buying it. There was also a new whiskey manufacturer, I think it's Fox's, who had actually sent anticipated this and sent 6 months of product to America. So they were anticipating no problems for 6 months. So in a way, paradoxically, industry seems to be the voice of calmness.
Because we don't really know. You know, there's lots of, I think it was... someone in government said this has changed things forever, and perhaps it had. And then a few hours later, the language was dialed back a little bit, yes, either by intent or otherwise. We actually really don't know where this is going yet, do we? Because if the problems with the US stock market, for an example, are sustained, you know, there was an executive order signed, wasn't there? So that gives, that sort of makes Congress's influence in this a little bit more complicated. But really, it's what happens potentially internally in America and how long MAGA supporters particularly are prepared to feel the pain, yeah, and believe the promise of prosperity into the future.
Well, the justification for the executive order is those kinds of executive order are only, as I understand it, meant to be used in an emergency. Trump has defined this as an emergency. But Congress really needs to begin to move. I do think that, as you have said, that the like the Republicans, who will have always have had an eye on, you know, the stock market, won't wear this. Like Trump is now saying 6 months to a year. I don't think either the American population or the Republican Party will wear volatility in the stock market. I mean, it's down, the various indices in the States are down 2-6%. That's not going to sit well.
Yeah, wouldn't it be amazing if Donald Trump's billionaire friends started buying up cheap stock now, and then these decisions were reversed to some extent and their value go through the roof again? It is going to be the richest that benefit. What's your take on all of this, Catherine Noon? I'll be back to you, Pat, of course.
Well, I think it's uncertainty, really, that it's creating, and business and people in general. And the definition of stress is very linked in with uncertainty. And the markets have responded in a very volatile way in the last couple of days, as Pat has alluded to. I think on a positive note for Ireland, we're part of the EU bloc. There's been no specific measure that has been put in place that targets Ireland, which I think is everyone's breathing a slight sigh of relief about that. But that's not to say that that won't happen in the next few days. I think that the economic situation, notwithstanding the issues that Pat has highlighted, which, you know, I agree there are issues in the country, but the economic setup for the country, which underpins everything, is quite strong. The figures are strong. And I think that we just need to be calm and to respond in the way that Ireland has always responded, going back as far as the 1930s and 40s, where we started to look outward as a country and to have a global economy, which leaves us vulnerable and open to this type of situation. And ultimately, we need to just sit it out and do what we can as part of the European bloc to reduce the potential negative impact for Ireland. One potential positive for the North, which is obviously very close to Donegal, is the fact that it will be a 10% tax rate with the rest of the UK. That could attract a lot of investment into Northern Ireland. But I think there'll be a wait and see how things develop approach from leaders around the world. I think reactionary tactics from the EU that could further fuel Trump's reactive, you know, I mean, we need to be the grown-ups in the room, in a sense.
And you know, like, say, for instance, let's take Nike, one of the biggest companies affected by this, right? I mean, they manufacture in I can't remember which country off the top of my head, Malaysia,
I think Vietnam, or one of these.
Vietnam,
Eastern,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so like they're paying $150 an hour, even with 54% of a surcharge on their goods, they can't up and move to the United States and build a factory, because if they had to pay the wages that they pay in the America, it would still be in excess of. The cost of the product would still be in excess of what they're having to shoulder with the tariffs. So it's not like that kind of major business is going to move back to the United States.
No, and I doubt that that's actually what Trump thinks is going to happen either. I mean, it's hard to know what he thinks, but, you know, the likes of Nike is down all of the gains that they've made over a number of years in the last couple of days. So, you know, that's a very useful one to highlight, to show how this is actually impacting. But it's back to the uncertainty point, Greg. You know, all of the Republicans, as Pat alluded to, they watch the stock market. These are moneyed people. They vote Republican because often Irish people go to America and they're Democrats, and then they make money and they realise, okay, if I want to hold on to my money, I need to be a Republican. And, you know, that is what it is. But people vote, as they say in America, with their pocketbook. And, you know, I would totally agree with the point that the uncertainty and the markets are going to dictate a huge amount of what Donald Trump will do. And I doubt that he'll get 6 to 12 months of a period amongst the Congress in general to allow him to play this out in the way that he seems to want to. And I think it's a wait and see from Ireland's perspective, not to be overreactive, as I said, and to do what we can as a bloc. And we're part of a much bigger bloc than America. The EU is a bigger economy as a whole than America. So, you know, and we've been a friend to America, and America's been an excellent, most great, you know, gracious friend to Ireland when it has come to peace and everything. So I think it's just really regrettable that this is where we're at in the relationship as such. I could go on, Greg. But
No. Listen, there'll be more from you on this. Ben Harkin, what's your reaction to all of this?
Yeah, well, you know, I have to agree that the uncertainty is a major part, and the confusion as well. You know, I've heard from a number of Trump's team on news and on that chat, and some say that, you know, these tariffs are only temporary, that Trump believes that there should be no tariffs and this is how he's going to make it happen. Other people on his team are saying that no, tariffs are going to be there forever and this is going to replace income tax. So there's confusion even in his own team as to what the end goal of this is. And I think that confusion, you know, I know you said that it's, you know, about making America wealthy again and that. I find it difficult to see how investment will come in America based on this here, given that, you know, a president made it and a president can take it away straight away as well. We've seen Trump change his tariffs, you know, sort of at the drop of a hat before. I don't understand how Trump thinks that companies will maybe just pack up from Europe and move to America based on this here. On, you know, what I think everyone thinks is going to be temporary.
What confuses me is the metric they use to figure out these, you know, the tariffs on America is they divided their exports into the EU into the imports from the EU. And they come up with the 39% figure and set a tariff of 20. But if you look at individual sectors like cars, I believe it's 10% is the tariff on cars from the United States. And in the other direction, it's 2.5%. So does Donald Trump, is he looking, in other words, there's not actually the tariffs there to close the gap. So what is he trying to achieve? Is it that we reduce the tariffs on cars down to 2.5%? Is that enough? You know, VAT, he seems to be including VAT in all of this as well. I mean, what is he looking from Europe?
Yeah, like I think it is going to take some sort of a concession. You know, again, like I seen a number of serious analysts in America last night say that, you know, they think that the team seemed to use ChatGPT in that to come up with this here based on, you know, how simple the formula was. So looking at that there would make me think that this isn't a serious idea. This isn't something that they think is going to last their full term. And that I think Trump wants to show that he has strength on the world stage. And I think that he hopes if he gets some sort of a concession, then, you know, that there could be the end of it. I think that what Ireland's focus needs to be now is that, you know, it does look like the European Union are going to have some sort of retaliation. I think Ireland needs to try and make the case that that doesn't include, you know, alcohol exports, and that also doesn't include things like agriculture and that, because the worst thing could be then that if Trump would sort of double that or increase that there, then that could be, you know, even more harmful for Ireland.
Well, Catherine, how do we negotiate with Trump on this? Let's say, for instance, we're not going to start importing the meat because it doesn't comply with us. Do we change our regulations? Well, As I mentioned, you know, the specific tariffs in certain areas are far lower than the 40%. So where is the middle ground?
I think the potential for the EU is in the tech area to come back with something, because I suppose if you think of it strategically, and you look at even his relationship with Elon Musk, but there are many more tech bros that Trump is very friendly with and who've supported him. So if they start to be affected by retaliatory tariffs that the EU put in place, you know, I think it's probably dangerous territory, especially for Ireland, because we have so many of the tech companies in Ireland. So it's a delicate one. I mean, there's loads of areas. I mean, it's tit for tat, isn't it? So we start doing one thing, he starts doing another. Where does that end? That creates more uncertainty, more confusion. And, you know, I think that what Ursula von der Leyen, and I heard Simon Harris speaking yesterday, and indeed the Taoiseach, you know, calm heads and try not to, you know, stoke it up too much more. And I think the EU have a renewed sense of you know, togetherness about it in these negotiations. It's a bit like Brexit, you know. I mean, this could do more damage than Brexit did to Ireland. But equally, if managed correctly, the impact mightn't be as bad as everyone expects. And I heard David McWilliams speak about this yesterday, and he thinks that it's not going to be as bad. And he tends to be fairly on the money. But, you know, listen, it's all opinion at the moment, isn't it? It's all speculation as such. Because
this is literally, it's called 9 to 10 on the Nigel Noon Show every Friday. But you're quite right. Maybe he'll be hung by his own potato. Is that a possibility on this, that we just wait and see, Pat, that we really back to where we started, that it's the internal pressures that might be our best friend?
Well, possibly. But one thing, I suppose, that has struck me, I did see a clip from 1986 where he was being interviewed by Oprah Winfrey. And now that's like nearly 40 years ago. And he was on about tariffs. OK.
Yeah.
And so clearly this is something, like, he's so volatile, the fact that he's had the same opinion from 1986 to now in itself is remarkable. But it's also an old model of the economy, you know, like most of our employment is in services. The idea of focusing on products, you know what I mean, is it's old hat. It's not the future. So, but I think he is not going to be easily turned, since he's had this obsession for 40 years.
But he also can spin a win out of a disaster as well,
totally.
So, you know, and because of the nature of the media in the United States, if he has to backtrack and claim a win somewhere, he's perfectly capable of doing that. And tariffs historically in the United States have been politically damaging. Whatever about economies, they don't work politically. And the midterms are on it. Is it next year the midterms are rolling around?
Well, 2 years away. But I suppose I'd like to come back to just one thing that Catherine said. I do think our biggest danger, paradoxically, could be the EU. Because in terms of its response, I mean, given that we've had the, you know, the double Irish and all the kind of slightly annoying little, from the EU's point of view, fast ones that we have pulled in the area of technology, and given the fact that the tech card will be one that they can see that they can get to Trump on, if they actually use that, that could be much worse for us than anything Donald Trump is doing or going to do.
In terms of any pharmaceutical tariffs, and there is provision for that in the document they drew up, are we at an advantage in that it would be another case of Donald Trump shooting America in the foot, in that it would make the cost of medicines and medical devices into the United States incredibly expensive? And it would, for the medium term, you can't just up and leave one country and move to the other. Ben, could that work in our advantage, that, you know, he's talking about the inability for the United States to produce its own medicine in an emergency? Well, do they really want to be driving up the price of medicine and medical devices at this time? Could that work in our favour?
Absolutely, Greg. You know, I was looking at some of the polling there this morning. You know, I think polling now is that 30% of Americans think that Donald Trump is fully focused on reducing prices. He was essentially elected, you know, on reducing prices, on bringing down the prices that people are seeing. I was reading yesterday, it looks like, you know,
and he invented the word groceries in that as well, apparently. Yep.
Groceries are all going to go up in that. So, you know, I think that Americans are obsessed with their with the stocks. That impacts their pensions. That's going to be a major thing, you know, and I think this week, when you're looking into next week, when you're looking into the weeks ahead, it's going to start impacting people's pocket. And I think that's going to be a big problem. And, you know, on the pharmaceutical companies, on the tech companies, they need to be based in Europe. They need to have a base in Europe, whether that's in Ireland or whether it's in Germany or wherever. So I don't think that they want tariffs as well on them just because they have to be based somewhere. You know, so I think it's just going to be a matter of how long Trump can last this out. Mm.
Catherine, we are in a situation whereby, and I know many people listening will feel that the positive economy is not trickling down, and Pat alluded to that a little earlier on, but the bottom line is, in terms of our economy, we are running a surplus. We do have the capacity to ride this out. Potentially, there are companies that are already, if they haven't started, will be starting looking at alternative markets that will be there once this tariff and everything passes. I mean, that is the truth. Everything does pass. So we can look to our resilience, hopefully, and also to the fact that we are such a small open economy, other markets that 33% of our exports are to the United States, right? That's massive, but there are other markets, presumably, we can grow.
And if there's anything that Ireland has shown over the years, is that adaptability. You know, most of us on this panel are from the west of Ireland in some place, you know. And, you know, Irish people, traditionally, since the famine, have made the best of very difficult, tricky situations. And we have, I think, a unique mindset, a unique approach to life. And, you know, I mentioned about the global economy that we introduced in the 90s and 30s and 40s in Ireland. And that's been a feature of the Irish economy since then. And, you know, I think we'll pivot. We'll do what we have to do and make the best of whatever situation we're in. I mean, at the end of the day, this is political for Trump. You know, the markets can do what they like in that, but he has a way of putting across a point to the American people, or maybe 3 points or whatever it is, that's really simplistic, overly simplistic. And they latch on to that. And that's what largely why they voted for him, etc. And he has a large following. But the cost of things being more expensive for people, the markets reacting, that's going to affect everybody in America. And I think he's playing a dangerous game. And, you know, and back to the tech point, you know, we talk about Ireland and having fast ones on Europe and all of that. We simply have a very advantageous tax rate. But that's not the only reason that companies come to Ireland. It's the location, as both of the other speakers have said. It's the fact that we've a very good workforce, very good conditions. It's all good and well putting a good tax rate in place, but you need to have the infrastructure and the legal system and all of those things that Ireland has that's been thought through and strategically planned for many decades, and that's going to stand to us in the period going forward.
Our climate too, especially with the likes of
fabulous.
No, AU Lanzarote. No, for data centres, the climate, the cold climate.
Data centres, that's another whole big conversation. But ultimately, we have been very strategic and very clever in Ireland between the IDA and Enterprise Ireland, and we have fantastic civil servants who are extremely professional, and we're the envy of a lot of countries. And that did not happen by accident, and we'll continue to be that sort of adaptive kind of, you know, strategic and intelligent workforce. And, you know, I'm not overly pessimistic. I think this will be okay.
I think the older you get, and I'm talking from about myself here, not you, Catherine, the more you realise
that... We're all getting old.
You see cycles in life. And just, Pat, finally, before the break, we move on. The one thing, too, and I'm not jeering, by the way, because I respect everyone's points of view, but the very strong Trump supporters in Ireland are struggling at the moment to react to all of this news because, you know, they're starting to realise that he is putting America first and he's not terribly interested in his popularity or support in the rest of the world, and it's putting MAGA supporters in Ireland in a bit of a sticky wicket and what to say on all these measures. A lot of ex-accounts have got a bit quiet on this issue.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, I can't kind of, it doesn't wake at night, that issue. I do think that the many Irish Americans who voted for Trump in America are also having a bit of I'd say, sleepless nights, because much as they wanted to make America great, I don't think they really wanted to have their nostalgia enacted in Ireland that we go back to the donkey and cart, do you know? I suppose I do think that, I mean, on the pharma, like, apparently, I haven't checked this out, but as I understand it, putting taxes on pharma is against the World Trade WTO rules.
Mm.
Putting tariffs. So in fact, he can't do that on pharma. And so in a way, and obviously moving. Now, I've also been surprised. In fact, only 30,000 people are involved in jobs that are would be threatened if, given the US, what, even if the worst happened in US pharma. Of course, I appreciate that there's knock-on effects in terms of these are all high income, probably. And so the knock-on effects. But in a way, I suppose I've always felt a bit ambivalent about pharma because we pay way over the odds for our pharmaceuticals here. When you in Lanzarote, you pay far less.
Don't you know?
So, in a way, it's almost as if there's a deal between the government and the companies, which
no.
I look forward to learning a bit more about, because often things come out in the wash.
I'm not sure I fully agree with you in there, but we are disadvantaged in that, you know, when there are medicine shortages, our friends in our union, the likes of Germany and France and others, outbid us. We are often at the end of the queue for medicine. It's not spread out in an EU sort of per head of population way. It's whoever is the most cash gets it. So our unions sometimes can be a little bit unfair.
Well, I mean, in a way, this is coming back to our influence and our vulnerability to Europe, a Europe which is increasingly going, as I see it, right wing and reflected in tolerating Orban and Hungary and the whole shenanigans over there. So in a way, I think it's a very interesting time that we'll discover how deep our friendship is with how reliable the EU has been. Like we got a lot of support on Brexit, but at the time of the economic collapse, we didn't.
So
we did get support.
Not as much as we.
Yeah, but also in terms of Brexit, we were the fall guys to some extent because it was our fishing industry that was one of the final gives to get it over the line. But anyway, listen, Catherine, did you want to come back on that?
No. I suppose I'm very pro Europe. I think it's been enormously beneficial for Ireland. Sure, in any union, there are going to be concessions and there's going to be, you know, tough situations like we have at the moment. But, I mean, we have to remember our size. You know, we have a big opinion of ourselves, rightly, as a country. You know, we're very effective communicators. We're very effective on the world stage. Irish people are in powerful positions all over the world, be they, you know, descendants of Irish people or people who identify as being Irish. You know, we punch way above our weight. But at the end of the day, we're a very small country. And I think, you know, the UK leaving the European Union was an act of self-harm. Yeah. You know, there's been no country in the history of the world who's left an economic union. So there's the good and the bad. And I appreciate the point that Pat's making. But ultimately, I think Europe, you know, I think it has been really positive for Ireland.
Oh, I completely agree on the past. Yeah. I mean, I'm a paid up member of thinking in the past, it has been absolutely stunning for us, for women, for all sorts of things. Yeah. But I must say, Gaza has for me been a bit of an issue.
Right. Well, listen, we can have a word on that. Ben, are you pro-Europe?
I am. Yeah. Like, I understand what you're saying there, Greg, you know, that at times it isn't fair. At times, you know, maybe we don't get our fair share in that. And I think we're going to see exactly where we stand, you know, in the coming week, because we're going to find out now if von der Leyen, if the Germans, if the French are going to try and protect the car industry, if they're going to hold on to them tariffs, or if they're going to work with smaller countries like Ireland to protect, you know, their industries.
Feels almost like a rhetorical statement. I think they might try and protect the car industry.
You know? Yeah, well,
they're going to protect what they can. You know, they're going to protect what they can.
We're very exposed potentially to the measures Europe has at its disposal. Okay, listen, we'll have much more from Ben and Catherine and Professor Pat after we take a break. We can grab a quick coffee. We'll be back in 3 minutes. So funny listening to how economically illiterate you all are. They seem to be putting feelings and emotion before real economic data. Well, I think you can make a very strong argument that, this whole tariff row is economically illiterate. And I think 2.3 trillion euro might point to that. Greg, why not highlight the massive VRT tariff Ireland has imposed on UK vehicles for years, indeed? I mean, like, listen, I would like to maybe go into the electric cars and get a BYD from China, but, you know, the EU has imposed tariffs of, what, 15, 16, 70% to protect the German automotive industry. We're not behind the door in that regard either ourselves. The EU doesn't care about the tech industry in Ireland and will target that, causing havoc in our economy, believes the listener. The coming to Trump slump to Ireland due to new tariffs. Surely our government can plead our case to President Trump. After all, the Irish have a special relationship with the US and helped to build America. Surely we should have an exclusive exemption to tariffs. I'm not sure that's actually doable. Yeah. Hi, Greg. The chickens have finally come home to roost. All that mattered in this country for the last 30 years was FDI, pharma, high tech, etc. Not looking after the small indigenous local companies. We've destroyed farming, tourism, things that we were good at, pubs, shops, etc., closing at a rate of knots. These are the businesses that got us through the 80s. We've priced ourselves out of everything. Who's going to pay for all the extra people in this country now? Ben Harkin, that is somewhat of an interesting point in that I wouldn't say we've put all our eggs in the sort of, you know, FDI basket, but there's a lot of eggs in that basket, isn't there? And maybe now we are starting, could this trigger a move towards more support and investment in small and medium enterprises?
Yeah, there is for sure, Greg. And I think that, like, we probably haven't seen the spillover effect that we were expecting from FDI. Like, I think the original plan with FDI was that these big companies were going to come in, they were going to make the small companies in Ireland more efficient. They were going to teach us how to be, you know, good managers. They were going to make us better entrepreneurs and that. And that didn't really happen. I think partly because they have so much money, they can take people out of Irish companies. That's something that I hear, you know, in companies in Dublin that a lot. So I think the point is then, though, you know, we need to support more indigenous companies. I fully believe that. I think we need to be more competitive, need to be better building companies in Ireland. We need more competitive as an industry across Europe. But if you look at, for example, say Kerry Group, Kerry Group's an absolutely massive company, Irish indigenous company, and now, you know, they have a tariff put on them as well. So I don't think it's necessarily that if you have, you know, Ireland is a small market, to be a very big company in Ireland, you have to be exporting. And now this is what's happened. So I think this is just a difficult situation to find us in, whether it's FDI or indigenous companies.
And I mean, in fairness, we've got the local enterprise office in Donegal, for an example, that does do an awful lot of work in promoting entrepreneurship and small and medium-sized businesses. And the IDA, I think, are less guilty of dishing out the grants to get companies to come in that then depart when the grants have passed. So I do think there was a bit of a shift in recent years to try and do more to support more potentially sustainability businesses if the FDI were to pull out, or the FDIs were to put out those companies.
Yeah, like, I wonder, is that something, like, what I'd heard before is that it's sort of the grants are there to help you set up a company, and that's great. What people struggle with is they take a business to a certain size, and it's then difficult to become an exporting company. It's difficult to sort of bridge that gap because you have to get to such a size in Ireland to do it. So I think that that's a problem, and that's maybe something that we need to look at, to take our sort of smaller indigenous companies and try and now can we sort of build them up then to being competitive across Europe.
All right, Pat O'Connor, do you think we've taken our eye off the ball with the small and medium-sized companies, or are we doing okay? And the FDI money was there, we had to take it.
Well, I think this has been an issue for years and years and years, right? This didn't occur yesterday. I suppose I do think that one of the things that has to be said is that the international companies pay much better than the basically small and medium sized Irish companies. And so in a way, it also feeds into, you know, this obsession with getting university education, getting a good job to start, and the lack of interest of a lot of parents and their children in working at local level in a job rather than a career, right? Okay. And working for much smaller money. And so in a way, we have kind of colluded with the state's prioritization of FDI. Now, in a way, like the working from home has given people the best of every world in that, at one level, in that people can be on international salaries, living in attractive areas with the community. Whereas the idea of working in a local tourism or accommodation business paid a little bit above the average industrial wage, we've never been keen on that.
Quick word on you from you, Catherine, on this one.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that Pat makes there, because, you know, when's the last time you saw an Irish person other than maybe a student working in a bar or a restaurant? Or, you know, we do have, you know, and rightly, people are ambitious and, you know, people are going to work in the best job that they can get. And if that's in a foreign company that comes into the country, well, you know, fair play to people who... I was at a conference in Google before I came over here the other day, and there are Irish women working in Google in very senior roles, you know, on a world stage that we should be very proud of, you know. And the fact that it's Google, to me, is incidental. It's, you know, these are great careers. And, you know, I think the tourism, it's a fair point that both of the others have made about tourism and small businesses, because in the 80s and 90s we relied heavily on tourism, and when things got bad in the bust, we again lent on tourism. And I think we have become very expensive. You know, the hotels, the larger hotels, have played a big part in that. And, you know, places like Ballyliffin and places like that around Donegal, that, you know, they've had people having to be accommodated, and town, you know, the town suffering as a result, that impact is going to be seen if the economy goes down a bit over the next while. And I do think there needs to be a renewed strategic focus on tourism, especially in places like Donegal, you know, where...
Well, the big spenders are the American tourists, and that's another element of this that I meant to mention
and
little earlier on.
The currency has gone against them today now.
And I saw a recent receipt from Temple Bar of some of the prices being charged, which
is not reflective of Ireland,
but it's absolute gouging and greed. And you look at that and you think, you know what, you don't deserve any trade.
Exactly. And the hotels have played a huge part in that. And of course, the smaller hotels are doing well to keep everybody paid, get the profit that they need to keep going. You know, and there tends to be a big focus on Dublin. But if you look all down the west of Ireland, you know, people working in small businesses, and they're very dependent on that tourism product, and it has to be protected. I might be gone slightly off point there, but it was relevant to what the other two speakers were talking about, just, for, you know, getting away from the FDI and the dependence and reliance we've had on tourism over the years, you know.
For sure. And just, it's funny you mentioned about the profile of those that are working in pubs and bars. Like, I remember, you know, just during the Celtic Tiger and the lead up to the crash, it was the same. You know, there were lots of people from Eastern Europe or what have you working in Bundoran and Letterkenny and everywhere. Yeah. The economy crashed, and it was those types of jobs then that the Irish went into. So in other words, when the times are good, it's not us doing those jobs. And then when
we have a funny attitude to those jobs in a way, because no, I don't really want to do one of those jobs either. You know, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, people should be doing them. You know, I mean, ideally, you know, you wouldn't be on your feet all day serving tables and being behind bar. And it's when you go to Italy, Spain, other countries, you see older gentlemen who've been in the career as a bartender or as a waiter, and they take pride in their work. Mm. And, you know, there's a reason why that doesn't happen in Ireland. And I think it's ambition, it's striving for better, it's, you know, whatever it is,
it all comes down to pay, because if the truth be told, if you work in some of these industries, you are on minimum wage. A lot of the jobs in this county, for an example, are in those industries where people are on minimum wage. And if you want to keep a car on the road or even dream of having property, you know, you're not going to be able to do that. But if you're at a certain stage in your life, you have kids have left, you know, you're out working with people in the public, and you don't need the higher wages. Such, it's an interesting point, but then again, bigger wages in those areas means greater costs, which impacts tourism, and it's complicated. Yeah, a quick break, back with more shortly. A caller says, if you buy any American goods in a shop, you have to pay 23% VAT. Trump's people have correctly argued that the VAT amounts to a 23% tariff on all American goods. What Trump has done is impose, in effect, a 20% VAT on EU goods in order to level the playing field. Brussels is upset that the days of getting a free ride are over and they have to pay their fair share with no gamemanship to be played or taking an unfair advantage of the US. Well, that's, with respect, nonsense, because VAT is not specific to a country. VAT is on the product wherever it comes from.
Of course.
And I actually think I heard him trying to describe VAT, and I think he got it completely wrong. That is, that's a charge that's across the board. It's not country specific. It's not a tariff as such. But anyway, it's interesting to hear the argument because I heard it elsewhere. A quickie here. The quality of people's driving in Ireland has plummeted, we're told, since COVID-19, and it's putting people at risk, according to the Irish Road Haulage Association. Irish Road Haulage Association President Ger Hyland said things are particularly bad in rural Ireland. Bad attitudes, tailgating, overtaking on dangerous bends. He believes there should be the mandatory installation of black boxes in cars, which would allow for greater oversight of bad drivers. Have you noticed, if you're out and about in the road, I'm not sure who does and doesn't drive, but we're all passengers at one point or other. Ben, I'll start with you in this one. Could you timeline a deterioration in the quality of driving?
Well, I only got my driving license during COVID, so I'm not really sure what driving was like before it.
Much safer. No, I'm only joking.
Well, I'll have to take your word.
That's good. You're on the road.
With my car insurance, I get it through Revolut, actually, and I have one of them. You get the black box. If you get the black box, it makes your car insurance like 20% cheaper or something. So I got that there. And, you know, in fairness, it does. I think it probably makes me more aware of my speed. I think it would just be a shame if that, you know, because so many people were selfish and drove irresponsibly in the road, that then everyone had to have it.
Do you find people are impatient with you, particularly sort of in the 50s and 80s? Because I presume you have the potential for speed infractions and stuff, right? So do you find other drivers are impatient with you adhering to speed limits?
I don't find too much. Maybe sometimes on the 80 roads, you know, you get people, you know, especially at night, and that maybe driving into blind corners and that. Like, and listen, people drive irresponsibly. That's what some people do, you know. And I don't know what the solution would be. Like, even a black box in the car can't really track that. It doesn't know if you're overtaken under a blind corner or something.
Well, some of them hard cornering, for an example, the black box will pick that up. But I mean, what it would do is you've talked about how you're more conscious of your driving, and that in and of itself perhaps is the net result of having the box, or one of the results.
Yeah, no, I suppose the benefit for me then is that I get a discount in my insurance, which I think if you have it, you know, there should be something like that there. Insurance for young people is very expensive. If you have that, you should get a discount.
It is remarkable. My he just turned 17-year-old son got insurance with the black box for €1,600. Which I think is quite remarkable. The renewal with the black box was €850. So that was with 1 year's license, 1 year's no claims bonus. With the black box, his insurance was €850, which I had to be blooming 38 before I got anywhere close to that.
The insurance companies do think that there's, you know, a substantial safety difference.
Well, they put great weight in it, for sure. Yeah. Pat, have you out and about in the road, have you noticed any change in driver's ability, capability?
Well, I haven't, to be honest, but I'd like to come back to the, the fact is that the people who are most involved in traffic accidents are young men. That's a fact. And yet, I mean, even in the reports, we're very reluctant to name this. So I think that in a way, giving as your son and in Ben's case, basically offering insurance for the particular group who are most likely to be involved in accidents, in basically giving them a very good cut on insurance if they have a black box, makes absolute sense. In the case of the Irish hauliers, now I haven't, because this I haven't checked this out, but am I right that after COVID they were allowed to do longer shifts, the hauliers were,
There was some reason for it. I can't remember. Yeah, there was some reason for it. But they don't counter. They don't really count, though, do they, heavily in the statistics?
Well, there have been. Like, one of the problems, which I have never really understood why somebody isn't tackled, is there have been some dramatic accidents where a truck basically doesn't see there's a blind spot for a bicycle on the left, and nobody has cracked how a driver of a truck can see that. Yeah. And a couple of cyclists have been killed in those situations. So, but I suppose, I think the Irish Hawley, my question would be, what is their angle in pointing this out, you know?
Insurance.
That in a way, yes, exactly. But that in a way, they're also, it's part of a lobbying campaign to not only to reduce insurance for trucks, but also they have begun to mount a campaign that they shouldn't be liable to fees basically passing through the motorway fees.
And just want to back something up with what you said, Pat, because sometimes when you point at a certain age group, people can get quite irked. Just in terms of 2024, the highest risk age group in terms of fatalities was 16 to 25 years of age, making up 20% of those that sadly left the light. So it's just a bit of data to back up what you said.
If you disaggregate them by gender, sorry, Greg, I'm putting across here, if you disaggregate them by gender, it's even more striking.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right, Pat.
And it was consistent to, in 2023, 16 to 25-year-olds accounted for 27% of fatalities. As I say, it just can be quite emotive, that argument, so I just wanted to back it up with the data that's there.
Could I come in on the haulage stuff, Greg?
Yes, if of you course, don't mind. Please.
Yeah, I mean, the Village of Fawn, I'm on the Residents Association there, and I'm maybe on my hobby horse a bit here now, but the speed at which trucks go through the Village of Fawn, it shakes the village. And I believe that the speed should be reduced there. But I do believe that truck drivers, they have a job to do. They have to get to a place. But there are certain roads that they should be driving more slowly on. And they drive on roads that they shouldn't be on at all, trying to get their job done. And, you know, we've seen a lot of accidents. There have been serious accidents between Buncrana and Derry there. The volume of traffic alone on that road is something really serious. And, you know, maybe I'm just being very selfish talking about this here now, but like, as a resident of a small village that has a main road going through it, it is extremely difficult to even cross the road, and people don't give two hoots, only get through that village as fast as they can. And, you know, a 60 kilometre speed limit on that road is way too high. You know, the key for everybody here is to get speed reduced. And I'm actually very impressed with Ben and the incentive that the insurance company has put in place there, and his attitude in general as a young person. You know, it's very good to hear that, because I think so many people are just thinking how they're going to get from A to B as fast as they can, and they don't give two dams about other users of the road, inhabitants of villages. And I think there's a cultural problem in the country, and in Donegal there's a particular problem with young lads driving these souped up cars. And, you know, it's very sad what happens to young lives, and it's an awful hard way for young people to learn.
Unbelievable at times. Ben Harkin, author and chair of Ogra Fianna Fáil and Donegal, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Catherine, give us one more look at Lanzarote, please, if you don't mind, if there's no one in front of the camera. Thank you very much indeed. Have a lovely time. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. And Pat O'Connor, thank you so much as always. Lovely having you on the show.
Thank you.
Take care. We're going to take a break for the news. We'll be back with Seamus Gunn answering your legal questions after the news and the obituary notices.